I grew up with like The Lion King and like all those absolute 90s Disney's classics. And this was like, what was going on in the 80s, right? Like, I was like, money, cocaine, that's what happened.
Puppets.
Yeah, but it's terrifying. They're not like good puppets, they're like nightmares.
I'm going to say right now, this film scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I don't think I even saw it all the way through, because that dog thing that runs through was like the worst thing in the world for me. And then shortly afterwards, the pony dies. I kind of thought, I'm out.
I'm not against puppetry, but this is like terrifying, uncanny valley stuff.
It is. Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Flix Watcher Podcast. Today I'm joined by Andrew.
Oh, hi.
And Frank.
Hello.
And Helen.
Hi.
And we're going to be talking about A Never-Ending Story.
The Never-Ending Story.
The Never-Ending Story.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Thanks for listening today. Joining us today, we have Andrew and Frank. If you would like to say hello to the listeners and tell them who you are and what you do, please.
Oh, hi. My name is Andrew. I am an academic, a researcher, a teacher, a lover, and an occasional podcaster.
Occasional podcaster?
Yeah.
Because that's how we met, is on a podcast circuit. So are you just a hanger-oner now?
Probably, until I don't have a 100,000-word book to write anymore, and then maybe I'll consider doing a podcast again.
That can soak your time up.
That's a big book.
So your accent's not from the UK?
No, it's from the greatest state in the Union. It's from the great state of Maryland in the United States.
Is that the greatest?
Yeah, easily. There's 50 states and a couple of territories, and we're number one.
I mean, I've been to Hawaii, and that was quite good.
Yeah, but the you can't live in Hawaii. The cost of living is out of control. There's typhoons and volcanoes. Volcanoes. Lava will eat you. You don't want to live in Hawaii.
And who are you?
I'm Frank. This is my first podcast. It's very exciting.
Oh, welcome.
And I am in my day job, a mental health nurse, and I float about on the internet as a mental health nurse and transgender advocate. Giving people my opinions that they haven't asked for.
But yeah, as we said, this is
what the internet's for.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
This is your mouthpiece.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So who chose? It was yourself. Who chose Neverending Story?
Andrew chose the Neverending Story.
Neverending Story, I should say.
The Neverending Story. Yeah, because
can you tell us why you chose it and give us a 1-minute synopsis?
All right, synopsis really quickly is the story of a pair of children who plumb the depths of like human depression and sadness through the metaphor of a grand unifying theory of fantasy. That's literally what happens in the movie.
And let's just say IMDb, because that seems different to what I have it down as a synopsis.
Yeah. The kid goes on an adventure with the Orin and he finds a luck dragon, blah, 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 blah. But the story is dealing with grief and depression. And I chose it because if I were to plumb the depths of my earliest memories, the Neverending Story is somewhere in there. Mm. And I had not, until viewing it for this podcast, seen it maybe since I was 8, probably.
Sure.
And I remembered it being a lot better.
I was going to say as well, if your earliest memories are this, that's quite scary.
Well, no, my earliest memory is Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, okay.
What, the film Super Mario Brothers?
No, the video game Mario Brothers. I can pick the date. I know exactly when that memory is. June 10th, 1988.
Oh, dear.
Why is that no dear case?
That's your earliest memory.
Super Mario Brothers, yeah.
Yeah.
When I'm like have dementia, the thing that's going to like be the tool that they use to combat it is they're just going to put an NES controller in my hand and I'm just going to bust out level 1-1 without it breaking a sweat. It's going to be fantastic.
I mean, I can like vouch for that because Andrew and I do live in the same house and there is some kind of becoming a bit attached.
Is it retro gaming, or have you leveled up since then? Since 1988, you got a Switch. Okay.
Yeah, though I am almost a convert as well. I'm getting
almost.
There. Yeah, almost. I'm
What's
getting there.
The barrier?
Just money. It's like I need to decide that I am invested enough that I will put down the money to have it.
Oh, can you not use this? The main benefit of the Switch is that two people can play on the same console.
Yeah, but then we can't play at the same time, which
you
would also...
With the Switch you can.
Certain games,
yeah, but I want all the Pokemon.
Right.
You've got me hooked on Pokemon, and now I want to play Pokemon.
Gotcha. And I
That's
have
That's what's
shield,
really happened.
So...
it's the gateway drug Pokemon.
One of the... It's quite good you've chosen this as a film you remember from your youth.
Yes.
Because I guess one of the things we thought about when we started Flixwatch is that we get people who are like, oh, I've not seen that for ages. But generally it doesn't happen that much, which is one of the reasons I chose RoboCop for our 100th. I haven't seen this since I was a kid.
Yeah.
We'll get on to that in a second. But Helen, what were your thoughts?
So I'm glad you've already sort of laid down the, it's not as good as I remember. So obviously I have definitely seen this before. And there was bits that I can remember, but watching it again, I was like, I really don't remember this. And I really don't remember it being this dark. And in my head, I think what I remembered was probably more the Dark Crystal or Labyrinth.
Mm.
And this, I was like, oh, this starts off a bit grim and sad, and the pony dies and... And
really
then
soon, like,
yeah,
really quickly.
As we were watching, I said to Frank, if you put a gun to my head and told me at what minute in the film, like, or what section of the film Artax sinks into the swamp of sadness, I would have been like, oh, 70 easily. Like, we're deep in the film. Nope, it's like the second thing that happens.
It's act one, isn't it?
It's half an hour in.
Yeah.
We were just like, wow, this goes up real fast.
Which is so funny because I remember it being a really tragic moment that had this like severe impact. You said you don't remember it being this dark. I definitely remember this being this dark. I remember it being really dark. But I remember like crying when Artax dies. Why? You have no connection to this horse. you barely know this horse exists other
how
than...
How old were you?
Like 4 or 5 or something along those lines. But yeah, it's sort of a... But you're right, though.
But the song, though. The song is so happy.
Can we talk about how great the score is for this?
I mean,
Giorgio Moroder.
Giorgio. My name's Giovanni Giorgio. It's quite Daft Punk. So you're a big fan of the song?
Well... I wouldn't say a big fan, but...
I was quite surprised it's right there up in front at the start of the film.
Yeah.
Because that's not how big songs work in films, is it?
Not only is it up at the front of the film, it repeats throughout the film multiple times in multiple arrangements, including like one just pure synth, like downbeat. Like we've taken it down half an octave and we've slowed it just a little bit. Like,
I mean, having the big songs at the start, though, is more in like... older films,
yeah.
You know, and also having the credits, if they're still called that at the start, is also a thing, you know, like with the old films. I'm just thinking of, we've seen a load of musicals recently, so they do that with all of those.
Sure.
They stick like, you have like an overture. It's a bit like that, isn't it?
Well, I think the... Everyone's talking in the light. Well, I think the... When I think about the big films that had the big songs... I'm thinking Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where the song was at the end.
Mm-hmm. Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, the song's... But isn't Axel F all the way through?
Yeah, that's at the start as well.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's similar like this.
The Axel's theme is definitely...
Axel F, yeah.
Because you've got to put the banana in the...
In the tailpipe.
In the tailpipe.
But I think... I think most people are re-ingratiated with the song from Neverending Story. Most people recently from the latest season of Stranger Things.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, well, the song's going to be there at some point. And it was like... Okay, we're starting with the song, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, right, fine. Not that it's a bad thing. It's just I was quite surprised. No one else was surprised. Everyone's looking blank-faced at me.
Did anyone do the research on the internet that proved that Stranger Things could not possibly have seen the Neverending Story?
I was trying to work it out, because when is Stranger Things set? We're going off into
season
a different
is 84.
Property. Right.
Don't want to spoil it. Just takes place in 1984, but it's in the summer of 84.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this came out in 84. I'm going to guess it's the summer 84. I don't know, though. I could have researched it.
It's a very
tight
window, isn't it?
But I just thought of that right now. It's tight. Yeah,
because season 3 was set in the summer because they'd just come back from camp.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would have assumed that the whole point was they were happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Because that's why they're obsessed with it.
But he's also at camp the whole time. I don't know.
Did you go to camp?
God, no. I don't have money for that.
All right.
Apparently, you've got to be like having the money
summer camp is like 10 grand a summer.
Because we don't know these things from the UK. We just think everyone goes to summer camp.
Yeah, well, you guys are counselors.
I know some people went to Camp America from my university.
Mm-hmm. Because I worked for camps later.
Right.
Maybe half of all counselors are British or Australian because you get a free flight to the US, free room and board, and a paycheck for 3 months. And you're at uni, so you actually have that 3 month summer.
Gap, yeah.
And then, you get to take a couple of weeks before you have to go back to uni to
knob around.
Dick around in America.
Exactly. Frank, what were your thoughts on Neverending Story?
So it's really interesting because I'm coming from a different perspective in that I didn't see this as a kid because I'm that bit, like, so I was born in 91, so this was like over, you know, like this was like, so that's the other interesting thing for me as well, is that like all the films that Andrew is bringing up relating to this, like you've already mentioned as well, I've not seen any of them.
Right.
They were not so I've had to see them as an adult, which is a very different experience.
It totally is.
It's a bad film. I grew up with like beautiful things like The Lion King and like all those absolute 90s Disney's classics. And This was
Andrew's biting his lip here.
All the way through, I was just going, what? Like, what was going on in the 80s, right? Like, I was like, money, cocaine, that's what happened.
Puppets.
Yeah, but it's terrifying. They're not like good puppets. They're like nightmares.
I think this is one of the worst cases of puppetry.
This is the worst. If there's a trilogy of puppet movies, and I would even say there's a fourth entry that comes a little later that are so similarly related, which is The Dark Crystal, this movie, The Labyrinth, and then later Return to Oz.
Right. Also terrifying.
Which is terrifying. That movie starts with someone getting electroshock therapy and gets darker.
Is this a child's film?
Yes.
What is up with this?
Return to Oz is a U. This is a U.
Nope.
Yep.
Disagree.
Whoa. Return to Oz is a U? Get out of town.
It might be.
PG at a push.
Yeah.
Oh,
they would have marked it as a kid's film.
I mean, the coming out of the 70s, you know, the 80s were not a great time.
No. Well, but Frank makes a great point in that in the 60s, you have Disney classics, like 101 Dalmatians. It's like 64 or something like that.
Yeah.
The 70s, Disney takes that awkward turn into live action where it's like Herbie the Love Bug and what's the twins movie that was later remade?
Freaky Friday?
That was remade with
Lizzie Lohan.
Parent Trap.
Because I was like, Freaky Friday is also Lindsay Lohan, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, they're both, they actually are. Like, and then in the 90s.
Parent Trap, I love that movie.
You know, the 90s is the golden age of, that's from 89 is Aladdin. Little Mermaid.
Yeah. And then I was born in 91, so I was living the dream.
We had this vacuum in the 80s where like Disney is putting out The Black Cauldron. Yikes. Yeah. And The Great Mouse Detective. Yikes. And Oliver and Company. Yikes. Which is like a triple, that's why they almost went bankrupt. Like a triple threat of sadness. And then Jim Henson was like, I'll do it.
I feel like the children's films in the 80s have got to be a reflection on the political times. Like, God, it's dark.
I'm going to say right now, this film scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I don't think I even saw it all the way through. Because that dog thing that runs through, honestly,
terrifying.
It's as a, well, this came in 1984, which means I maybe saw it when I was six, 2 years later, given the VHS time. That dog running through the swamp was like the worst thing in the world for me. And then shortly afterwards, the pony dies. I don't think I would have cared that much about the pony, but just kind of thought, I'm out. Mum, Dad, I don't need this. And then, but like you say, Andrew, that's right at the start of the film. So I don't know what I did afterwards, because it's like 10, 15 minutes into the film and this shit happens.
No.
I don't think I watched this film.
No. I'm not against puppetry, but this is like terrifying, uncanny valley stuff.
It is. This look dragon thing, which is like the main theme, is rubbish.
I like it's eating a human being.
Because Falcor is weirdly like a Chinese-styled dragon, but also a dog.
Yeah.
Like he has scales and fur.
which is, the scales are awful.
The scales are weird, which I think what happened, here's my theory on Falcor. They went with the scales and then he looked terrifying and trashy. And yeah. They were like, well, everyone loves a dog. Add fur.
Put a dog face on him. Put a Labrador dog face on him.
And why is he candy floss colored?
I don't know. He looks...
Ooh. Well, he's white.
He's not white.
No, he's not.
It's slightly pinkish.
He's salmon pink.
Yeah. Mm. And also, I know it was the 80s, but this, I just thought the special effects looked so bad.
Oh. And considering there are movies that are made a long time before this, yeah, where the special effects last,
yes,
and are so much better, you know, and this is just... Nope. The whole way through, I felt sad.
Not for lack of trying. You can feel the trying in this movie. Mm. But it's a... No, I think it's an absolutely garbage movie.
I actually just wrote down that I feel like there's just too much money floating around in the 80s and people are just like, let's just make it. Oh, no one goes, so should we?
Quarter of this movie's budget went up some producer's nose easily.
So when did Dark Crystal and Labyrinth come out?
Labyrinth is after this.
Right.
About 87, 86 for that.
Yeah. Right. And I believe Dark Crystal is...
Dark Crystal's before Labyrinth.
Before so Labyrinth.
85, maybe?
Yeah, I think it goes Neverending Story, Dark Crystal, Labyrinth.
Right.
And then Return to Oz is, I believe, 90.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's sort of a... And I think, like you, what I remember is things from those movies. Even though I've seen both of those movies more recently than that. Mm-hmm. Like... I thought it was the Bog of Eternal Sadness because I took the Swamp of Sadness and the Bog of Eternal Stench.
Right, put them together.
And I put them together into one thing. And I thought it was the Childlike Empress, but that's actually from The Return to Oz is the so Childlike
just,
something.
You just kind of melded all these into like one kind of mixing pot. And it's interesting, Frank, from yourself, that which one of those have you seen Return to Oz and
I've
Labyrinth?
I've seen only this.
Oh, no.
God, we've got to watch the
Labyrinth. Yes. I think the Labyrinth, Labyrinth holds up still.
Well, I mean, it depends what you mean by holds up. I mean, it is batshit bonkers.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And
but it's fun.
It's fun. And I mean, it's worth it just obviously for watching Bowie and Jennifer Connelly.
Watching a very specific part of David Bowie.
Yeah. That's what everyone remembers.
That codpiece is front and center. And like,
is this a children's film?
Yeah. But the thing is, when in the 80s, our TVs were these wooden monstrosities, these consoles, and you would sit on the floor in front of it. So actually, David Bowie's dick was like right at head level.
And the TV screen was kind of curved outwards
as well. Yeah, yeah.
It's like a
perfect.
People go on about being born in the 80s, but I think I'm okay. You know, I think I'm okay.
You're probably fine.
I think I'm fine. I think missing that decade was fine.
Yeah.
No. I can't really remember how this ended.
What do you mean? Haven't seen it just recently.
The never ending story? It doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't. So what happens at the end?
It never ends. That's the
struggle. This is going to lead to the engagement.
You're still watching it. We're, in fact, if you pay attention to the movie, we're in the never ending story right now.
Holy shit.
Intense. Because they made three, didn't they?
No.
They did. They made three. Yep.
Yeah. Yowza.
The sequel is potentially darker. I'd have to rewatch it again. The plot of that is that the villain steals memories to fuel them, like their power. But then when they start stealing Bastion's memories, the problem is Bastion creates Fantasia at the end of the movie. So if you take his memory,
spoilers for the Neverending Story Part 2 here.
I'm telling you the general plot of what happens. Sure. Is like that's the MacGuffin of that movie is that if his memories go, Fantasia goes with it. Then that's how do they get out of that pickle? How does the Night Goblin and
isn't that like the same thing as this movie? Like if he doesn't dream enough.
I didn't say it was creative. I said it was darker.
Oh, okay.
So the thing
is, it's like about like dementia or something. That would have been a good movie. You know, that would have been an interesting movie.
It's the Batman Returns to the Batman, though.
Does it have nightmare puppets again?
Oh, yeah. Several of these nightmare puppets return. Falcor's back. Rockbiter's back.
Oh, Rockbiter's the only redeeming feature of this.
How? What? Rockbiter is the best character in the movie.
Really?
These look like such good, strong hands.
That bit is genuinely heartbreaking.
I couldn't protect my friend. And then you're crying. You're crying.
When were you
immediately.
Crying? I was not crying. I was just kind of thinking, this puppetry looks weak.
Weird. Okay. No, I don't necessarily mean the puppetry. I mean, like, that scene is like the only redeeming feature. Like that's kind of like, oh man, that's sad. Like yeah. I didn't care about the horse.
I can make
be
my best friend cry just by looking at my hands and just going, they look like such good. And then he's just done. I don't even have to get to strong hands.
You've just given me some serious ammunition against him.
I'm good.
Excellent.
Right. Yeah. The other creatures. Let's go through the other creatures. The rock biter and those people that appear. The racing snail.
I mean, they're
and...
all irrelevant, aren't they? They're all just completely irrelevant.
They serve. Okay. The night goblin serves only the purpose of reacting.
So which one's a night goblin?
There's the guy who flies on the bat.
Right, okay.
Into the ivory tower. I love that the Emperor's finally lives in ivory tower.
Are these character names by IMDb, or have you just made these up?
I'm trying to remember them off the top of my head. He's a goblin. He's a night goblin from the south.
Mm.
And then there's the snail
from
jockey.
From Alabama.
The snail jockey? They thought those up, didn't they?
He don't think we get his name. It's just he has a snail. He's a snail jockey.
Are you making these up? Is this what
you
did?
No, I'm pretty confident on this.
If you made them up, of course you're confident. Yeah. You made them up.
What about the two little people that kind of helped him through the gates?
Right. They have names that I can never pronounce correctly.
The professor.
Yeah.
Okay. I actually said when watching this, I was like, he's the only character I like thus far. Like, he's acting more than anyone else.
Right.
Like, he's actually doing acting. He's not
falling
just
over.
Saying lines, you know. But, I mean, like, compared to everybody else, like, he could get an Oscar. If it was just, like, everybody in this film, in my opinion.
I'm sorry, you don't feel that Atreyu...
Oh, wow.
...is acting hard enough? That hair is doing all of the work.
There were multiple times where Andrew just talked about Atreyu's hair.
Such good hair.
It's interesting because this has zero stars in it.
So yeah, no one's broken through, have they?
No, and it wasn't what even like they were... It wasn't even like they were big at the time or in other things that mm-hmm. were kind of big around this. It's just this very, very strange film that everyone just kind of remembers the song. And then when they watch the film, they're like, what is this?
Why was it so popular at the time?
I think there was not much else.
Puppet frenzy.
I just told you, it's because Disney had fallen down on the job.
Just fallen asleep for like a decade.
And parents were like, sweet Christmas, I need to get some people. These children need to get into the theater.
Spielberg had put out E.T. by this time.
Yeah, E.T. 3. Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because this is from Wolfgang Petersen, which is famous for Das Boot.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
The director, mm-hmm. Das Boot, is...
Yeah, I mean... Yeah. I'm just...
And then he later went on to make the classics Troy and The Perfect Storm.
Oh, the Perfect Storm is in that, with
he
Clooney?
He has, like, no
Clooney.
Theme.
Yeah,
yeah, that guy knows... Doing? No, his theme is meandering.
Does he make, like, a film a decade, then? Is that what happens?
I think so. He's got some other ones, but those were the three that really stuck out for me.
I mean, Das Boot, Neverending Story, they're both, like, deep dives into, like, the inner psyche of darkness. I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, let's go into the depth of the darkness that you started out with, Andrew, because this is... A common trope with 80s films with children,
absent
so the absent parents and or orphans.
Oh, yeah.
And that weighs hard in this right from the start. Or, and or kids being bullied.
Oh, yeah. That was big
in
the
80s. That all about? Because if you think about like the adults making these movies, why are they obsessed with the absent parent thing?
I've got this one down.
Yeah, go on, historian, tell us.
Because if we're looking at... timeline wise, if you're in your 30s or 40s in the 80s, you would have then been a kid mostly in the 60s. And that's when no fault divorce became legal in the United States and became de rigueur.
It's Mad Men.
Correct.
Everyone's getting
divorced.
Correct.
Everyone's getting
married. Okay.
So all of the producers of films in the 80s are the first children of divorce.
Right. Interesting.
And we hadn't quite figured out what to do with it. Mm. And so, like, Bastion's relationship with his father. And it also, you know, Bastion's got to go on the hero's journey. And if you've ever picked a comic book up, mom or dad is dead or both.
Spider-Man, Superman,
Flash, yeah. Batman.
Don't speak his name.
Iron Man, all of them.
Which
not Batman, don't
talk. He's got an anti-Batman over here.
I'm just, yeah, that's a different story for a different time.
Okay. Pretty sure at least two Green Lanterns have dead parents. Like
There's more than one Green Lantern?
Well, there's an entire corps. Spoiler alert for the Green Lantern. But so you've also got that element too. But man, that pep talk with his dad.
Oh,
is
wow.
The
That's
best.
An opening, right?
Yeah. Where the dad is like making himself the hangover smoothie of like orange juice and an egg in a blender.
It's intense.
In his 3-piece suit. Because I guess he's a banker. I don't know.
Mean, yeah, why is he wearing a 3-piece suit? What's happening?
And I love how kids are just let to roam. I'm assuming this is Manhattan or some big city.
Oh my gosh,
yeah. It's so
weird. Just like, get yourself to school, kid. drop yourself off in the middle of Manhattan and get make sure you don't get run over by a car.
Yeah. Just best case scenario at Chicago.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, how old is he? Like 10?
Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous. Yeah. He is wandering this isn't a city today.
He's wandering around with a huge bag, contains stuff, which is easily to swipe.
Why is he carrying a suitcase? Like, what's happening?
Suitcase, which has the image of a Native American hunting buffalo on it. What? I gotta imagine that's his mom's. There's like 30 minutes missing from this movie.
No, it doesn't need to be any longer.
No. There is a minimum of 30 minutes missing from this movie. Because we got to figure out that the mom's name is Moonchild.
Oh, yeah. Can we talk about that?
When did that happen?
Well, because at the end, he has to name the Empress, right?
Right.
And then he said, I can think of a good name, my mom's name. And then he names her Moonchild. Was his mom called Moonchild?
That mom.
So that could tie in with a Native American name.
This makes sense. That's sure. why he's got the bag.
That's why he's got the hair.
And that's...
Atreyu's got the hair.
Bastion has the haircut that all white boys had in the 80s.
Yeah.
I looked exactly like Bastion.
Indian.
Yeah.
So yeah, but Bastion's the kid in the 80s. Atreyu's the kid on the horse.
But maybe Atreyu's like a version.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Atreyu.
He's like his projection, isn't he?
Yeah. That's the point during the second trial when he looks through the mirror and he sees Bastion. We're supposed to.
So is that why the name is Moonchild?
Possibly. I mean, but that's not a Native. Is that a Native?
I don't know. I'm yeah, deferring to yourself as the only one who lives in America, Native or otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah,
anything.
We had one Native American in my part of America. Like, that's it. Literally, that's it. We had one guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. And also, I
and
think
his name was Hugh.
I also don't know that this film is going to be a good example of like Native American culture. My feeling is no.
They did cast a white kid an obvious Native American character.
And then you also have the one thing I do remember from this is like, he's just reading a book for the whole day through to midnight, presumably.
Mm-hmm.
His dad don't even know, like, how to look after a child, let alone, like, that you've got to check that they're at
school. Have this salmonella egg with some orange juice.
Yeah, I mean,
this school doesn't know how to look after a child either.
It's the 80s, man.
There's just a key to go to this terrifying attic just right there that he just picks up. Like,
didn't Sarah say there was one of those in a school she used to work in?
Well, there's one in the school that I work in right now.
Just a cobwebby attic in your school.
Yeah, you just said there was an attic or something you could get into.
There's an attic
in the
school I work in, and there's like a ladder that goes down into like a service duct, and someone has written "Help me," scrawled in the wall, and it's just like cigarette butts because it's obvious that's where kids used to go like smoke cigarettes.
I mean, you have to do that, right? That's like.
But if you were to ask me what's happened in this movie before I watched it again this past Sunday, I would have been like, yeah, he goes into like a library.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Finds this, like, talks to the dude, gives him a book. I think a dude gives him a book. And then he goes to like the attic of the library, like a reading room area in the library. And that's where the window is the whole time. No, he went to school.
He went to a modern-looking school, which had a creepy-ass, like, gothic library.
I have to say, you guys' memories of this is a good example of what the brain does with trauma, right?
It's the next level.
I'd just like to put a disclaimer that nothing I say should be taken as medical advice. Please.
As a mental
as a registered nurse.
I am off duty.
I watched this yesterday, and you're saying things, and I'm like, what? I don't remember that.
Yeah, you're traumatized.
So you don't remember the attic?
I remember the attic. Sure. And the rat and things, but some things I'm just...
Which rat?
There's the rat.
Yeah, there is.
There's a rat in it.
Oh, there is a rat.
There's also two skeletons.
I mean, like, immediately I'm like, is that a skull in the background? Like, I mean, I know we got biology class and all, but, like, we use plastic skulls and stuff nowadays. Like,
maybe it's just a really good replica.
Yeah, it's one of the ones where like they color it the right thing and like where the sinews are supposed to be.
Exactly.
One of those anatomically correct skeletons. No, it's oh my god. But this movie, what I said in the beginning is this is a metaphor for Bastion processing his grief and depression. That's what's happening. Like everything that happens is like the stages of grief, right? Because like first everyone's in denial of the nothing, and then we get the depression when our tax goes, and then like Atreyu's like losing his shit at the old ancient one. Like it's moving through all the stages.
I understand how the horse is depressed. I mean, like that was a stretch for me.
How can the horse be depressed and him not be depressed when he's just fucking lost his
thing? And then he doesn't.
It doesn't sink into the sadness.
But you know, that's not depression. That's sad. Like there's a difference between grieving and sadness and depression. The horse has clinical depression.
I will say obviously, like, or not obviously, but there is a distinct difference between depression, grief, and sadness,
right?
You know, those are three distinct things. Whether or not a horse can be depressed, sure. And also, yeah, okay, if this is the swamp of depression, fine, you're not going to become depressed in an instant, and you know, maybe he is just sad and that's why he doesn't sink. I don't think this film is that deep. That's my thing.
It just thought, let's kill a horse.
You can read that into it, which is fine, but I really don't think they thought that much.
Should we head on to scores, guys? We can keep chatting during this time. Right, Andrew, you chose A Never Ended Story. Can you give us a recommendability score out of 5,
please? Out of 5. I'm going to give it a 3.
Right.
And I'm going to give it a...
After saying this film is garbage...
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 3 out of a sheer sense of, if you've never seen this before, you've got, like, I need you to witness this. I need to know that I didn't hallucinate this.
I need to share my trauma. It's part of my recovery.
But like, but I feel like it is, it's a time capsule of, because it's the first in this disconnected trilogy, if you will. It's a time capsule of, like, what was going on in children's media in the 80s. Like, on TV's side is this just awful commercialism. Like, literal cartoons built around toy lines.
Yeah.
Which is what the Transformers is, for those of you who don't
know. Toys that made us.
Yeah, exactly. So, like...
Check out Netflix, guys. It's great. I really enjoy that documentary series.
Is on there. That's right. It's just recommended to me yesterday. So, like...
Season 3.
You've got that going on. This kind of tells you, like... This was the quote-unquote, like, mature media, because this is also coming out of time with, like, The Land Before Time, which is kind of dark, the aforementioned, like, Black Cauldron, which is extremely dark, or The Rescuers.
Yeah.
That's an 80s. That's dark. That movie's so scary. The Rescuers Down Under is so much less scary. But this really, I think, is... Except for Return to Oz, this is like, that's too scary.
Yeah.
That's a genuine horror film. This is palatable. And I think, like, you've really
ruined my life as a 5-year-old.
Got to experience this. And it's so influential.
I'd
argue this film is hugely influential.
But we've tried to maybe not really try to unpick it, but we have kind of all wondered how this has stayed in our craws of our minds for those of us who witnessed it in the 80s. Mm. I don't understand why, because it's just better.
I think it's reverberated. So if you take like the score of this movie, I almost feel like they have a legal case against Nobuo Uematsu, who did the score for Final Fantasy.
Right.
Because it is like... Vanilla Ice's Ice Baby and Queen, like, it is that close. Where I'm sort of like, boy, you just like added one extra flange somewhere in the middle there, buddy. It's too much. But also, like, it's one of the first popular media properties that blends mythologies and fantasies, mm-hmm. and like, you know, because you got a little Egyptian, you got a little Native American. There's a couple faces of Bo, although I know Doctor Who hasn't done Face of Bo for like 20 years into the future or something like that. But like, it's really throwing a lot of things into the pot, which is like all fantasy now. Mm. Like that, the thing with the bear, Golden Compass. I don't know why thing with the bear got me to Golden Compass, but sure. You know,
that's... Dark Materials.
Yeah. That's just like, let's take a little bit of this, take a little bit of that. You know, like Neil Gaiman's writing Sandman at this time. Mm. Fantasia and the dream world are exactly the same. So, I don't know. It seems like its influence goes beyond just the source material.
Frank, your recommendability score.
So, while you were saying that, I was actually thinking, I put my recommendability score for my peers. Because for my peers,
I think that's fair enough.
I put 3.5 because I just... If you have a loved one in your life who was a child in the 80s, this will help you to understand them better. A recommendability for children is a no, never watch it.
Right.
It's not a child.
That's the caveat for peers.
It's not a film for children. it will disturb you.
Anyone under 14, I would hesitate.
It's an upsetting movie. I mean, for children, I mean, it's an experience as an adult, you know, and it tells you a lot. I mean, also for me, a big one, it sounds silly, is people talk about this film.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, you know, you can't. And it's like, I now feel like I need to be watching Labyrinth and all
that. So this is to close off the loop for those guys.
It's a cultural experience. And if you want to be able to talk about that, you've got to watch it. It's also wacky. It's wacky, you know, and it's, I don't know that I've seen another film like it. And that makes it kind of special. And I do wonder from your point, Andrew, whether, although it did it really poorly, whether people who did things well took bits from it and made it better.
Yeah. I think it definitely happened.
Helen.
Yeah, so I guess with this, if you have never seen it, should you watch it? I mean, yeah. Maybe. If
what caveats are you going to give them? It sounds like you've got you've got a list of things to...
Well, I mean, I guess if you're a fan of Stranger Things and you're like, man, this song's amazing, and like they get really excited. And
is the song that big a selling point? I don't get why.
It's the best bit of the film.
Yeah, and then you just stop it like 2.5 minutes in. Switch it off.
Yeah, okay. I mean, yeah, I mean it's completely irrelevant to the film.
Yeah,
it's kind of the song. Stranger Things has kind of created this feeling for this film, which
right.
I feel if most people who've watched Stranger Things and are like dancing to this in clubs, having never seen the film, they should probably watch the film.
Are they dancing to this in clubs?
I hope so.
Dancing to this at certain immersive events related to.
Oh, was this in secret cinema?
Yeah.
Was this song in secret cinema?
The song features.
Okay.
And, oh, wow.
That makes sense.
And it was like, okay, people are really getting into this song.
So what's your score?
It's a banger.
Lamar on vocals. Go on.
I'm going to get 2.5. It's curiosity, I think. And if you remember watching it as a teen and you want to, sorry, as a child, and you kind of want to go back to it, then maybe do it. But don't say we didn't warn you.
So I rewatched Labyrinth at university and remember loving it. And that was, okay, so 15 years ago when I saw that. And I'm a bit wary of watching it now because things have changed since then. Things have got better. Technology's got better. But this has not. Has it? And I just couldn't. And that's the thing. I just couldn't. I
was expecting it to have got better, but I didn't think it to be like three or four steps down.
Worse than you thought it was. Because we watched, someone brought to the table The Princess Bride, which I'd never watched. And I was like, kind of looking forward to it.
Andrew made me watch that for the first time.
And what did you think?
You like it.
Me a look. I mean, I wouldn't give it a rating of a good film, but it's funny.
Yeah, okay.
It's slapstick and it's funny and it's quotable. I have no desperate urge to watch it again.
I think so. I'd never watched Princess Bride before like 3 months ago. And I was like, oh, this is actually, I can see why this would have been an awesome film to have watched in the 80s.
Yes. Yeah, I suppose I can absolutely see, especially why kids would have loved it.
Yeah.
Completely.
I can't see why I would have enjoyed it.
Because I don't enjoy Princess Bride myself, but I appreciate why people do.
Yeah.
And I appreciate its longevity.
Mm.
But other than the fact, the only comparison is basically they're reading from a book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing else comes close.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm not comparing directly. I'm just comparing it from my experience of not having seen something in the 80s seeing something for the first time.
What's critical about Princess Bride, though, is unlike The Neverending Story, no one saw it in the 80s.
Yes.
It totally bombed in theaters.
Yeah.
It was a home video, passing the tape around, rental at Blockbuster success that became a cult. Like Cary Elwes.
Cary Elwes, yeah.
I don't even pronounce his name. Sorry, buddy. They were doing like revivals of it and like people like doing the full Rocky Horror treatment, he was like, really? All right, like, cool. Like, we had fun making that movie, so, like, rock out, everybody. But, Yeah, now, where the hell were you all 20 years ago?
That's probably why I never saw it, because my parents wouldn't have seen it in the cinema and never thought to pass it on to me.
I had the same thing with The Goonies. I saw that for the first time very recently as well.
Ooh, what was that like?
Have you not seen it?
Oh, yeah, of course, I've seen
it. You've seen it, okay. what was that like?
No, but...
that's a wacky film again. I mean, what's going on in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
Like, I am...
Child endangerment. That's what's going on in the 80s.
It's like, I'm in danger.
Throw them off a cliff. I'm going to go with you, Helen, 2.5. If you haven't seen it, I'd say watch it.
It is only, an hour and 34 minutes?
And if you have, yeah, and if you have seen it's
a tight
but a long time ago, I'd say rewatch it, but just don't expect anything much. I'm glad I've rewatched it 30-odd years down the line, but I just generally don't think I'm going to watch it. I wouldn't inflict any children.
Nobody said it was good. Yeah. Nobody said it would be so bad.
Repeat viewing score, Andrew.
Guys, a 1 out of 5. I mean, it's been 25 plus years since I saw it. I'm good. I can go another 25 years without seeing it again. I'm pretty happy. I will just YouTube the music video.
Sure.
That's fine. Mm.
Mm. Can I give it a 0?
You can do.
Cool. Yeah. Don't ever watch it again. Yeah. There's very, very, very few films I say that about, but it's why? I mean,
I'm going to rickroll you with this film at some point in time.
I've got an extremely bad memory, so I won't remember any of it. But if you remember things, don't watch it again. If you're like me and you forget things, I mean, this is an irrelevant.
So you're thinking like you'll be goldfishing like 10 years down the line thinking,
I'll be goldfish by next week.
Sure.
My memory's terrible. I can barely remember it now. But if you remember things.
Maybe it's a defense mechanism.
Absolutely. I mean, let's not go there. absolutely. Like, don't. If you remember it in 10 years' time, you don't need to see it again.
Sure.
That's my feelings.
I like that. If you remember it, you don't need to see it again. Don't need to inflict yourself on it again. Helen.
0.
0.
I'm not going back to this. I'm thinking I've seen Labyrinth so many times, and I remember the last couple of times that I watched it, just thinking, oh, this isn't that great, but I'm still really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
So when was the last time you watched Labyrinth? Because I'm trying to gauge my Labyrinth experience. This was 30 years ago for me. Labyrinth might have been 10, 15 years ago.
Probably like in the last maybe 10 years I've seen it.
You know,
the last time I had the VHS of it or something.
Oh, yeah. So you're going proper old school?
Yeah, but I used to
top loader. Sorry.
The difference with the Labyrinth, though, is it has easily six... Yeah, like half a dozen good songs.
Yeah.
It's Bowie, right?
Yeah.
I mean...
You got the Bow Man. You got the...
Did he
write the songs as well?
Yeah.
Okay. He definitely wrote Dance Magic.
And Down in the Underground, which is a great song.
The biggest thing, guys, you're missing out on is it's Jim fucking Henson. Yes. And this guy can tell a story.
Yeah.
Your man who... This guy...
Wolfgang
Peterson, and it was based on based on a book?
It is based on a book, which I've never read out of just sheer fear. I don't trust it.
The fact that it's called The Never Ending Story was never ever really going to sell it to you as a kid. This book never ends.
Yeah. I'm going to go for 0.5 for goldfishing purposes. 25, 30 That's years fair. Down the line, goldfish.
That's fair.
Small screen score.
I ranked it high on this. I gave it a 4 because I feel like, I never saw it on the big screen, but I feel like if you saw it on the big screen, it would be, one, you can't pause it and come back later. Two, I don't think the puppetry would hold up. If you can see it on the big screen, I feel like you're going to see all the flaws.
Did you think the puppets held up on the small screen?
It's okay. A couple of the puppets work. Rockbiter works.
No.
Rockbiter works. You wash your mouth out with soap.
Your man cannot... Your puppet cannot move his mouth in time with the thing.
The wolf, when it's clearly someone on a stick, sticking it in from the side of the screen.
This is why I'm watching it now. That, like I say, that bit scared me, but it was just... The dog head was coming from the left side of the screen.
Yeah, and it was like
You never saw feet or anything. You just kind of went... Dun, 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 dun.
And it was quite clearly as well, because the neck was a completely different shape from the whole puppet.
But it worked.
It didn't.
It terrified me.
And the sleeping bat. The sleeping bat is a great puppet.
It was a terrible puppet. It looks like it's going to fall apart.
That falls asleep mid-flight. I don't know. I feel like the ideal screen to watch this movie on is your phone. Is it Helen?
Frank, what's your score?
I actually gave it a 2 out of 5 because I want to see this terror on a big screen.
You want to see
it? Yeah. I feel like if I'm going to go through something awful and terrifying, I want it to be like, I want the whole thing. Yeah, I want to see that dog on a massive screen. I want to be truly like, what am I seeing? You know, like I do. I really, really do. Like if someone told me, that's when I'd watch it again. If you told me there was going to be a special screen of this somewhere, I'd be there. I'd pay the money.
Prince Charles must play this.
But they must have done like the 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. I would have sure they.
Oh God, the triple threat.
No, I just go for this one. I don't know why.
Oh, you could dive out after the first one. You could pay.
You might want to watch the second one.
Neverending Story 3 is so bad, I have not finished it.
Wow.
Helen, small screen score.
4. 4.
Yeah. I don't think. I'm going to go 4 point. I'm going to go 3.7.
3.7? Yeah. You're just making shit up now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We don't need to. I don't think you need to see this on the big screen. I think. It has not stood the test of any time.
No, but do you want to? I'm not saying you need to, but, I want to.
It's the fact it's on a small screen, I think, makes it better. If I'd seen this on a big screen as a rewatch,
Does anything make this better? That's my issue, is like, I think... That's why I've gone kind of like... what's the... meh.
Yeah.
What's the... Like, should I put 2.5? Because I'm so on the fence about it.
You could do. But let's go to Andrew's engagement score.
Given the fact that we literally fell asleep in the first attempt to view this,
yep,
and paused it and came back later,
yep,
I'm giving it a 1.
That's fair.
You do so not need to sit down with this. In fact, I would recommend against it. I say you take this thing in 30-minute chunks at most.
Does it slice up nicely in 30-minute chunks?
Yeah. You go until Artax dies.
Right.
And then you take a break.
So you leave traumatized if you're way inclined.
And you have a good cry.
Yeah.
And then you leave around. So the next one would be, basically after he finishes the trials.
Right.
And then you just come back for the kid terrifying his bullies who are now...
Oh, traumatized
PTSD
for life.
Yeah. Because a fucking dog dragon came out of the sky and chased him into the garbage. It's insane. Bastion is a psychopath.
I don't like Bastion at all. I don't like him at all.
What's your engagement score? You were there in the same sitting sessions as Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, we were jet lagged. I felt like that was
a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite engaged just through sheer what is happening? Like,
sure.
That was kind of like, if you're only watching it once and you've never seen it before / goldfishing it, I think you'd be pretty engaged. Because you'd be all the way through. It's not a long movie going, what am I watching?
Mm-mm.
Like, it's a discussion film. Like, you need to be there. Don't watch it on your own.
Sure.
I think that would be like,
sobriety.
You might be worried that someone had like, I don't know, put something in your drink.
Helen, sorry, you're going for a what? One?
No, I had a 3.
A 3, sorry, I apologize.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
I watched this last night. Honestly, I'm really struggling to remember a lot of what I saw. One.
I was... a bit higher. I think I'm going for 2.5 here because, like, say, your horse dies, the dog comes out within the first 20 minutes, very early on. And I was just like, oh, well, I really have no idea what's going to happen anymore in this film. And the princess, she's there in the last, like, two... She's in the closing shot, basically. So I literally have all this time of this film, which I don't remember happening. And, like you said, the dog dragon, I knew that was going to appear somewhere, but literally, it was like... I have no idea what's going to happen in this film.
You missed out on Nihilism Turtle?
Oh, we haven't even discussed Nihilism Turtle.
That was just gross, isn't it? For me, that
Which
was
Which is repeated, that almost exact exchange is repeated in Avatar The Last Airbender when Aang finds the sea lion turtle and it teaches him something that I shouldn't spoil because it's not from this movie.
One thing I did want to point out, actually, is the kid that plays Atreyu, I thought he was a really good actor.
He's a good kid.
I thought it was very active. He was kind of into the scene and
good energy
and stuff like that. I thought for a kid actor, you're very good. Mm. That's my main takeaway from this.
I mean, I think let's be honest, the best actor in this is the person who plays the Empress,
the child at the end.
Yeah, I guess so.
I was like, oh my gosh, they've left the acting until the very final scene. Like she is. I'm like. What's happening? You know, it's really, but all the kids in this are much better than the adults, apart from the professor. I liked him. I don't know why.
Professor. Sorry.
The observatory dude, guy.
Yeah.
His name's like Ugo or something.
Professor.
Like that.
Oh, I thought you meant the guy with the book. Hey, kid, I told you to get out of here.
What happened to that guy?
Yeah.
Like, did he also have a never-ending story and journey?
Why did he...
There's so many
loose ends here. Because his evil smile don't take my book, son.
Yeah, what's...
Terrifying.
Yeah.
That guy's a child molester. Falcor's a child molester.
Hey, it's the 80s. It could be true.
Scorsese says that a movie rests on three things, right? The directing, the writing, and the acting. And if you can get two out of three to work, then that movie works. And this movie has zero out of three. None of them are working. The director doesn't know what the hell he's doing. The script is 10 pages long.
I mean, there's so few words.
It is a tight script. And there is not enough actors. No two actors who can work it are on the screen at the same time.
No, it's true. It's true. Yeah. On that bombshell, guys, that leaves us on a score of 2.13750, yes. Which is low.
No, that makes sense. I agree with that score.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
And I chose this film.
Yeah.
It's
the lowest, unfortunately.
Can you sign off, guys, by letting the people know where we can find you?
You can find me on the internet at andrewdjohnstone.com. It's got all my socials.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the research that I'm working on.
How are you spelling Johnstone there? Because it could be...
Oh, gosh. That's right. Johnstone. Got to put that E on the end.
Yep.
Got to put the E on the end.
And you can also find me on the internet. I'm on Instagram and Twitter, and it's at TransRMN. That's TransRMN. The RMN stands for Registered Mental Nurse, which I love.
Nice.
You are a mental nurse.
Exactly. So yeah, I'm on the Twitters and the Instagrams.
Nice. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the mighty people for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.